Revelation. Mm-hmm. And kind of looking back a little bit, last week a couple of weeks back, we talked about the woman being Israel and the red dragon being Satan and the male child being Christ and the angel and all that kind of stuff. And then the last time that I taught, we talked about the beast coming out of the sea and the beast coming off the land. And so we saw, you know, Satan during this particular time and all the tribulation that we've gone through up to this point. Well, now it's pretty much the end of the tribulation. Really? I mean, we've gone through it? Well, yeah, kind of, sort of. Because it starts off in chapter 14, it says, "And I looked and behold, the Lamb was standing on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his name and the name of his Father written on their foreheads." Well, let's stop right there. Where have we heard about the 144,000 before?
Chapter 7.
And who do we believe those to be?
Some think Israel. Some think it's the church, along with Israel together being the church. I found something in Hebrews. I think Paul is kind of leaning toward it. Here's what he says concerning it. "But you are come unto Mount Zion, and unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels." Now, verse 23.
Right.
"To the general assembly and the church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect." So Paul, I think, is leading. He's talking about Mount Zion right here, going to Mount Zion. I think it's the same subject. You got the firstborn, you got the church, 144,000. I think this is his view of what's going on, what John is seeing in his vision in chapter 14. You see a lot of similarity.
There is a lot of similarity.
Yeah.
But we know that Jesus is going to come back to Mount Zion. Mount Zion is not like Mount LeConte and the Smokies. I mean, that's one mountain, right? Mount Zion are the mountains that surround Israel. So when we talk about Zion, we're talking about that geographic area. And we know that when Jesus comes back for the second time, that's where he's going to be. He's going to come back to Jerusalem and bring all the people to him. I think the last time I looked at this, and, you know, I'm up for correction, but I think the last time we looked at this, the 144,000 represented Israel or the church. But my personal belief is that these are Israelites. They are Jews that have accepted Jesus, and they have been chosen by God. And when we say the firstborn or the first fruits, we haven't gotten that part yet. I'm not sure.
It's in here someplace.
But anyway, they're the first fruits. So think of how, and God has appointed these people and sealed these people and said, "Satan, you can't come after these people because they've been sealed." And they're also virgins. Remember that? So we always think of virgins as being female, but they can be male virgins. And you remember when, speaking of Paul again, Paul said, you know, it would be better if you're not married. Well, why? And, you know, when there's turbulent times, why would Paul say it's better if you're not married?
You don't have a spouse to contend with.
Well, I mean, to contend with. See, there's a choice of words right there. Contend with. And I can't. But
if you're in
a situation and you know that it's going to be a turbulent time, and Satan comes after you, and he says, "I'm going to kill you," you say, "Okay, if I got to die, I got to die." He goes, "Well, you know, I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to kill her." Whoa, No, I'm going to kill your children. Whoa, no, you can kill me, but don't kill. You see how we would change that out a little bit? So you have now got liabilities that you didn't have before. So you can't be, quote, the army of God, which is literally what these people are. This 144,000 follows Jesus wherever they go. They are the army of God. They are, but they're the army that has been instructed to go and tell the gospel and go and deliver the good news about Jesus to all these people who are going through the tribulation. This is God's one more chance to try to bring more people in. And the harvest is supposed to be huge. During the tribulation, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to say, "No, this is God that's cursing us, and so they're never going to change." But there are a lot of people who are going to come to Christ during this tribulation time. Now, don't wait. It doesn't make any sense to say, "Well, I'm going to have that chance, you know, right there at the end. I'll kind of slide in. I'll do everything I want to do, and I'll slide in right during the tribulation." not going to really work that way.
You might die first.
Yeah. As I always tell people when we talk about Revelation, all they want to focus on is Revelation. I said, you walk outside here, get hit by a car tomorrow, you're going to meet Jesus long before Revelation happens. So you need to get that together now, not wait for some, like as we get older, we realize we don't have control over everything. When I was 18, I thought I did. I could do this, and I'm going here, and I'm doing that. As we get older, we realize that things in our bodies break, and our minds aren't as sharp. And I'm not talking about y'all. I'm talking about me. So don't be agreeing on all these points. But well, let's continue on. The 144,000, I believe, to be symbolically, but also I think probably literally, Jews who are going to deliver the message of Jesus, and the 144,000 is symbolic of the 12 tribes. They're taken from the 12 tribes of Israel. So it's 12 times 1,000. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Help my math. Whatever it is.
12,000 from each tribe.
Yeah, 12,000 from each tribe.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was looking back here to you. You can do this quicker than I can. see? That's what happens. Okay, verse 2. And I heard a voice from heaven, like the sound of many waters, and like the sound of loud thunder. And the voice which I heard was like the sound of harpists playing on their harps. And they sang a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. And no one could learn the song except the 144,000 who had been purchased from the earth. Yeah. Well, we're all purchased.
Then why ain't everybody hearing?
Why aren't they?
Why aren't they hearing if they're not all redeemed?
Why aren't they? Why? Well, you don't have a choice. So we're going to go back to this again.
There's a qualifier put on this. So only the redeemed can hear. Because God opens the eyes. God opens the ears. Christ.
So what makes them, redeemed?
God chooses to buy these back.
I don't think God came and says, I'm going to go to the cross and die for only a certain number. I don't think God looks at the whole world and says, we can go into the predestination and the whole thing, but I believe it doesn't say God so loved the world some people in the world.
Right.
And others he didn't. I think God loved everyone.
He loved for the arrangement, cosmos. Mm-hmm.
Purchased from whom?
Purchased for our sins.
From whom? Who you purchased from?
From God.
So I bought it from God.
Mm-hmm. You've been redeemed. You've been redeemed. No, you've been redeemed. You've been separated from God because of sin. So you can walk up to God and say, "Tell me how hard I can work, and I'll do better." But as hard as you can work, you can't be good enough to satisfy what God requires. And so that requirement is a pure and holy sacrifice. And that sacrifice has been the shed blood of Jesus. That's what redeems us. That's what saves us. So, and I've always thought of this, when you go up to heaven and they say, and they're going to probably ask you, it's like an interview almost. So why should you come in? If you say, I went to church every Sunday, and Wednesday nights when they were open, and I cooked down here in the cafe, and I went to El Salvador on a mission trip, and I did, and I, wrong.
Hey,
you can't do it.
The 144 is literal. Let's say it is. I think it's okay that not everybody who's a follower of Christ can learn the song that they're singing, because it's the thing that they're doing. It's for those 144 to sing the song. Just because I can't sing it doesn't mean Christ isn't going to save me.
Right. No.
There's 144,000, and if you don't know the song, you're out.
No.
It's not like that, I don't think.
No.
Of course not.
I don't think that's what we're discussing
okay.
either.
All right.
I mean, I don't think it is, or whether.
I just want to say one more thing.
Okay.
About me, don't I?
Okay.
Remember Romans 9.
Okay.
Jacob, God said, "Jacob, I loved; Esau, I hated."
Right.
Before either one did any good or evil.
Right.
Before either were born.
Right.
He so loved Jacob, but so we see right there that Jacob was redeemed, and Esau wasn't.
Right.
So I just leave it right there. I won't say no more.
But let me throw one more thing back at you. If I could look out here, let's say I'm a spiritualist. You've heard of those, right? Mm-hmm. I can look out here and I see auras. And I know that you've got a green aura, and you've got a green aura. These are good things. Green means go, right? And you've got a red aura. Well, I might as well just go ahead and pass her over, because I know she's going to hell. So why would I even tell her? Why waste the time of giving her the gospel, giving her the good news? Because I already know.
We know. No, we don't know.
We don't know.
We still give them the gospel.
Right.
We give them the gospel because that way the redeemed can hear.
Right.
The gospel is still part of the salvation.
Right.
It's going to come up right here.
Right.
I see this whole chapter as the method of salvation.
The method.
You've got redemption.
Well,
you've got the gospel.
Let's go to salvation. Because this is a fundamental point, and he's right. In Revelation 14, it's all about salvation. So from the beginning of time, before Christ, how were you saved?
By sacrifices.
No
one's ever been, Old Testament.
Yeah, no one's ever been no one's ever been saved by sacrifice.
No,
following the command, following rules.
No. Well, same way you're saved today. Grace. I'll just go ahead and give you
grace
through faith.
Yeah, and were you talking about the New Testament?
No, that's through the Old Testament. How was Abraham saved?
He was justified by faith, but. Israel still had the rules to go by.
Right, they had the rules to go by.
They had the law.
But if you, and we've already studied all the Old Testament, and I wish I would have had this light pointed more sharply at that during that time. You know, all the times when they were doing the sacrifices, yes, those were required because those were of the law.
Okay.
But no one was saved. I'm trying to make a distinction here. Those were what they had to do. But no person was saved
until Abraham.
Until they were saved by grace through faith. They were not saved by the actual act of killing the animal. So that's not what saved them.
Yeah.
They were doing faithfully what they thought God had required. So that's their faith is what saved them by grace through faith. But the actual act of killing those animals is not what saved them. You see what I'm saying? But they were doing what God had said. I mean, this is kind of a little,
Blood of the animals was a representation of covering your sin.
Right.
In Scripture, Jesus' blood is washing away your sin.
Right.
So that's part of why that the animal sacrifices went on over and over and over, because they were covering sins. They weren't
atoning
for God's grace and all. They weren't taking your sin from you. They were covering it from year to year or whatever the different times that they were done.
Right.
So when Abraham was chosen, I see what you're saying now. When he was chosen, then the faith that God gave him justified him.
Right.
Because at that point, there were no sacrificing. The law hadn't come yet.
Right. And they were able to, as we are when we're children, we think that if we do the right things, that we will, and even in our minds now, I mean, part of the reason we're all good people and obey the laws and do all the things we're supposed to do is because we think that's pleasing to God or pleasing to mankind or it's the right thing to do. But still, that's not what saves you. It is the right thing to do. Y'all don't all go out and become crazy on me. Keep doing the right thing.
Right.
But it's not what saves you. It's your faith that saves you. So this is more of a larger study than we're going to get into today. So let's continue on. We're not going to make it. I always think I'm going to be finished so early. But boy, once we start, it goes. I think we were in 4. These are the ones who have not been defiled by women. And that does not mean that just because you're with a woman, you have been defiled. You see what I'm saying? Even if they were married, that's being with a woman or having sexual intercourse or whatever. This is a glorious thing in God's creation. So
this is religion.
And
okay, it's talking about the heart of the Bible.
Right. Well, we're going to get there.
Yeah, this is religion.
But it says these are the ones who have not been defiled with women. They have kept themselves chaste. They are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever He goes. These have been purchased from among men as first fruits to God and to the Lamb, and no lie was found in their mouth. They are blameless, and also Satan couldn't touch them. Verse 6, and I saw another angel flying in mid-heaven, having an eternal gospel to preach to those who live on the earth and to every nation and tribe and tongue and people. Name me another time where you heard an angel preach the gospel. God didn't make it for the angels. Here, let me just give you a picture. I can stand up here 24/7, and I can preach. Lord help me, I can preach. You know, if I got rolling good and had plenty of sleep and a lot of coffee, I could preach. And I guarantee you, me trying to bring you to Christ, if all of a sudden an angel plopped down in fiery flames beside me and said, come to the Lord your God, you guys would change, boom, like that. So God could have sent nothing but angels and had them preach the gospel. But that's not His plan. His plan is for you to tell the gospel. So, but this one, you've got an angel.
Yeah, the message is still coming down from
heaven. From heaven.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing that you've got to remember here is, just in the last couple of verses, you've got these people firmly with their feet in Mount Zion, yet they're before the throne of God, mm-hmm. singing. I mean, that's kind of comforting, isn't it? Your feet can be firmly planted in this church, and as you raise your voices in song, it's being heard in heaven before the throne of God. When you're truly in a sense of worship and you're truly in a sense of praise, that connection between the earth and heaven kind of intermingles when you can get that real sense of God and purpose and praise and adoration. If your heart goes to that, that's what they're doing here. Okay, so we've got the angel, and I saw another angel. Did I already do the first angel? No. And I saw another angel flying in mid-heaven, having an eternal gospel to preach to those who live on the earth and to every nation and tribe and tongue and people. And that's where you were going back to Romans a few moments ago. It also alludes to that.
Yeah.
It's also in Isaiah. It's also in that same verbiage is in several different places. And he said in a loud voice, fear God and give him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him who made the heaven and the earth and the seas and the springs of water. And another angel, a second one, following, saying, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, she who has made all the nations drink of the wine of the passion of their immorality.
Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of symbolic. So, I'm going to ask this question. Who is Babylon?
Rome.
Very good. Or what's in Rome?
I don't know this was coming.
It's confusion on the earth. It's also deception. I'm going to say that. Deception is still going. A lot of people are being deceived at this point still.
I've read a lot of different things. I've really got to start highlighting these when I'm so sleepy and tired like this. But Babylon has fallen. More on Babylon will come in Revelation 17. For now, it is enough to see it representing mankind in organized rebellion against God. Now, that can be formed in lots of different ways. It says prophetically, Babylon sometimes refers to a literal city, sometimes to a religious system, sometimes to a political system, all stemming from the evil character of historic Babylon. Because she has made all nations drink of the wine of wrath of her fornication, when we are told that Babylon has led all nations into fornication, the main idea is spiritual fornication, the worship of other gods. However, we are never surprised to see spiritual fornication accompanied with literal immorality. I think that's all I had on that. But I like that it's organized rebellion against God in all the different forms that it comes, whether it's political or religious or just through your life in general. Any questions or comments real quick? All right. Verse 9, and another angel, a third. You know, these are the three angels, and you're going to see a lot of sermons and prophecies on these three angels. If you turn on the Bible channels now, you know, the satellites, they'll call them Angel 1, some of them, because this is how this message of the gospel is going to be spread, so they think that they're a fulfillment of that. Well, even Adam Clark, who's one of the commentators I read, he's ancient, you know, on 1700s or whatever, he said that the fulfillment of the missionary Bible Society in England was that first angel, because it was disseminating the gospel to all the world. And so it depends on what time period that you live in as to how you perceive this message of being in the angel. Verse 9, another angel, a third one, following them, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast and his image and receives a mark on his forehead or upon his hand, he also will drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is mixed in full strength in the cup of his anger, and he will be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever, and they have no rest day and night. And those who worship the beast in his image and whoever receives the mark of his name, here is the perseverance of the saints who keep the commandments of God and their faith in Jesus. And I heard a voice from heaven saying, write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Yes, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, for their deeds follow with them. Now let's go back to a couple of things here. It says, in verse 10, he also will drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is mixed in full strength. You know, when you have a mixed drink, and you're not that you guys are all drinkers, or, but you know, if you have a little wine and seltzer water, that kind of, you know, takes it down. Or you have bourbon and Coke. But if you had to take just the straight, pure, unmixed wrath of God, most commentators I read think this is the cup that Jesus didn't really want to drink when he said that night before he died, if this cup can pass from me. Remember that? Because he knew he was going to take the full wrath of God for each and every one of us. That's a little stiff. And do it knowingly and willingly. I want to go back to a couple of things. If you have Jehovah's Witnesses come to your door, or Latter-day Saints, or I'm not sure, but there are a couple of different organizations. They will say that they are the 144,000.
They say the exact number.
Which is really kind of strange, because most of the time they travel in pairs. It'll be a husband and wife team, which is really kind of strange if they are virgins. But because they've already not been a part of what they're actually saying. I could go through an example of an example of an example.
Spiritual spirit part.
Right. Yeah. But anyway, so there's all these different things. So the mark on the forehead or upon the hand. This mark that we're going to get, it's just another cheap trick by the devil. The devil never comes up with anything original. You know, you've got 144,000 that have the name of God and the Son and the Lamb on their foreheads. Well, he's doing the same thing. Or I'm going to put a mark 666 or whatever on their foreheads or on their hands, and that's the only way that they can trade or do whatever. So it's kind of a copying of what God has already done with the 144,000. But if you take that, he said he will be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. Now, when you think about hell, we're talking about fire and brimstone. So, you know, if you've heard fire and brimstone preachers, this is kind of what we're getting to right now. This is talking about a literal hell. And the person who talks more about hell than anybody else in the Bible is Jesus. So we're talking about a literal hell. And most of the time, and I probably said this here before too, is that I thought that hell was not going to be a place really of torment or torture, but would probably be a place with the absence of God.
A separation.
I probably said that. That's not what this says. It says that God's going to be there in hell. That the Lamb's going to be there in hell. And you're going to be there, if you don't accept him, in hell. And it's never going to stop. Some of these other groups that I've just told you about said that, you know, there will be torture for a time and then you will cease to exist. You know, an annihilation theory that you will eventually just disappear. That's not what this says. This says that forever and ever, and the smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night, those who worship the beast in his image and whoever receives the mark of his name. So God's going to be there. The Lamb's going to be there. The angels are going to be there. But you're still going to be in hell.
But see, I'm wondering on your statement about God, you know, being in hell. But I also think about the story about Lazarus. And, you know, he can see heaven. So it's not, to me, you know, I never pictured that this is all one place. But, you know, there's that chasm, there's that in between, that gulf. But part of the suffering and the torment and all is that you can see heaven. You can see those that have been saved and are in heaven, you know, rather than, you know, like you were saying, that God is actually in hell. They're still in the presence, like this says, they're still in the presence of God and Jesus and others, and the fact that they can see them, but I still perceive it as two separate.
And you may be right. I mean, I'm just reading from verse 10. It says, and he will be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment goes up forever. And when you think of the smoke, I mean, it's almost like the literal sacrifice, that the smoke of the animal sacrifice was a pleasing aroma to the Lord. This is a just judgment delivered by God for those who chose not to be a part of what he had planned. Go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, it, despite all the description, which is really, really descriptive, it could still be an internal torment. It didn't have to be literal fire, literal smoke. It could be just, you know, it could just, that God to be using these words to describe what we're going to feel like, because we can understand burning and smoking and all that, but it might still
and
be.
And never having rest. Never stopping. Could be.
But we see the smoke. We see the smoke going up. We don't really see the fire. Because once it turns to smoke, it's going up. And you're in torment. You're not thought of. You're never going to be seen. You're away from God. You're away from your loved ones. So that's a hell right there.
Yep.
That's a torment right there. Another reason why I don't think that the ones in heaven can see this, because if we are seeing this, I don't see how this can be a place of no tears.
Right.
You know, we're seeing.
Well, he may have done it that they could see them.
They see heaven.
They see heaven, right. But we're not going to realize that.
Or at least mine, you know, the way it doesn't say anything about anybody seeing it except the sight of the holy angels and the sight of the Lamb. So it doesn't say that those, you know, you and I that are saved and are there can look into hell.
Right.
And then it may be just a difference in translations. But see, with mine, it's saying that that it will be in the sight of the Lamb, and in the sight, so not.
Yeah.
You know, you might split hairs, but in the presence and in the sight, you know, could actually.
Let's go back to what does yours say?
Let's see, what verse was that?
Verse 11.
Yeah. And the smoke.
No, 10.
I'm sorry. And they shall drink the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his, into God's indignation, and he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb.
So, yeah, who knows? Guys, if y'all will hang with me, we're going to finish this up in 2 minutes, I think, and we can always talk about it next week. And I looked and behold a white cloud, and sitting on the cloud was one like the Son of Man. Jesus always called himself the Son of Man when he was here on the earth. Having a golden crown, so he no longer has the crown of thorns, he now has a golden crown, a victor's crown, his head and a sharp sickle in his hand. And another angel came out of the temple crying out with a loud voice to him and said on the cloud, put in your sickle and reap, because the hour to reap has come, because the harvest of the earth is ripe. Now, a lot of commentators will say, this is not Jesus sitting on this with the sickle. Go ahead.
Well, he's taking orders from another angel.
But he's not.
Yeah.
That's their contention. Well, Jesus isn't going to take an order from an angel.
Right.
Well, the angel came from the sanctuary, came from the, what does it say? Another angel came out of the temple crying with a loud voice. So Jesus is out here sitting on a cloud. Not that Jesus is not knowing what's going on, but the angel comes out. Hey, did you hear? Now is the time. Now, you know, he's announcing this, so everybody's hearing. Yeah. Jesus already knows this to begin with. He's not taking an order from an angel. This angel is basically making it known to everyone else, because Jesus, he's sitting with a sickle in his hand. He knows it's time. He knows the time is right. So everybody else is understanding this at the same time that he's saying this to Jesus. So he's not taking orders. Verse 16, and he who sat on the cloud swung his sickle over the earth, and the earth was reaped. Bam! One time, and the earth was reaped. And another angel came out of the temple, which is in heaven, and he also had a sharp sickle. And another angel, and one who had power over fire, coming out of the sanctuary, came out from the altar, so the fire from the altar, and he called with a loud voice to him who had the sharp sickle, saying, put in your sharp sickle and gather the clusters from the vine of the earth, because her grapes are ripe. Now, this is overly ripe. These are like bursting ripe. And the angel swung his sickle and the earth and gathered the clusters from the vine of the earth. Well, wow, grapes and vines, and this all seems very symbolic, doesn't it? And threw them into the great wine press of the wrath of God. Where have y'all heard wine press from before? The great wine press of the wrath of God, the vivid picture of judgment, was an inspiration for the battle hymn of the Republic. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vineyard where the grapes of wrath were stored. He hath loosed the fateful lightning from his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. So, I mean, I just thought that was really, really good. But the image of the sharp sickle gathering the clusters of the vines from the earth for her grapes are fully ripe. The image of the second coming of Jesus as the harvest is also communicated in Matthew 13 with the parable of the wheat and the tares. The implication is that true believers will not be separated from those who merely go to church during the final harvest. Verse 20, and the winepress was trodden outside the city, and the blood came up from the winepress up to the horse's bridle for a distance of 200 miles. So you're going to have five foot high blood trail for 200 miles. Now, they could not ever have imagined a battlefield that would produce that type of carnage. But when you think back just in World War II, 200-mile long battlefield is nothing. And in today's world, 200-mile long battlefield is nothing. So anyway, I'm going to stop right there. We're going to do 15 and 16 next week because they both go together. And I'll try to be a little quicker. Thank y'all.
And we can bring up something else if we
can. Yeah, please do.
Okay.
And we need to get you an email connection so you can just kind of you can send me off a little bit.
I can say it here.
It helped me get ready though.
She had to take something else important.